never see him again.
No.
Make up names.
Okay, while it's engaging conversation about our ethanol free, yes, we will go ahead and call our meeting to order. We have all board members present, and thank you for coming. So we're doing things a little bit different today with our work order, with our work. Yes, is that working? Okay. Usually I have a built-in microphone, so. Okay, we will begin with our work meeting, and then at 5:30 we will transition into our regular meeting at that time. So our first agenda item on our work meeting is reports on communication and report of concern.
I don't know that this is working, but simple and quick. So you have in front of you a flyer that will go home to parents. So I will be sending that out to every parent. Attached to that will also be the flow chart that kind of shows where you should start with a complaint or concern and how it should go from there. So it doesn't just go straight to the board or straight to the superintendent. So these are some of the things that we talked about that maybe people would want to see something and say something and that they would know where to go. On every website, it now says, I think it says questions, compliments, concerns. So Todd's going to take you there and show you. And this is on every school website. It is the first button. So questions, compliments, concerns. We thought it'd be nice for people to know
great.
They can also, you know, make a compliment instead of just a question.
Well, that's awesome.
And that shows you where you should start, what some of your non-emergency concerns may be, what an emergency concern is that you should get to somebody immediately. And then even if you want to go clear to the state level, it tells you how to do that as well. So that is on every school website. Every webmaster has been asked to keep that button there.
Okay.
And not remove it or move it around. And so that is everything.
Is the report of concern working? Because yesterday when I was trying to get at it, it did that to me.
Okay, well, I'll go in and fix that.
I actually sent a constituent there this week,
okay.
And they were unable to access it.
I will fix that. It must have been in moving things around. It got unlinked. So we'll get that linked back up immediately.
Okay, any questions from the board?
Are these printed already?
Yeah, that's my question.
No, I will send them out via email, so they're digital.
Oh, it's
so
email.
When I clicked on it, it wouldn't open up.
It won't. Because you clicked on it where? He has a picture. It won't. It's a picture. It will be a PDF, and it'll be clickable.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it hasn't been sent out yet. That'll be sent out. I wanted to wait till after spring break. didn't think it would help anybody during spring break. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
Is it possible to add a QR code to skip the app to their phones?
I'm sure it is. Yeah, I can look into that.
It's just something that I thought about.
Yeah.
And it's definitely something we'll be doing at the first of every year because I just think it lost its newness and we quit remembering to remind people about it. So we need to tell new parents that it's out there.
Sorry, I don't have this on. To remind them that there's an app option too.
Only thing I would say is that when I look at this, my initial reaction is that this is for like severe things. Just when you see this flyer itself.
That one is. See something, say something.
So, but once they scroll down, there'll be a big button that says just general concern.
Yep.
Yeah. So that they don't miss. Yep. Yeah. Think that their complaint or concern doesn't fit into these categories.
These are the ones we would want immediately brought.
Right, but so they'll be at the top of the page. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, and your call to action on the actual site just has report a concern. You might want to have your three buttons, which is question, concern, compliment. Just a thought, because up at the top it's like, oh, I want to give a compliment to a teacher, and then I'm like, where do I put it?
Okay. Yeah.
Because really, that's what we want.
We'll add all that.
Yes. Yeah.
We do.
That's a good point.
We prefer those compliments as well. Okay, thank you for all your thoughts.
Okay, any other discussion, comments? Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll go ahead and move forward to the next item, which is the 10-year capital facilities plan.
All right, so this is a kind of a quick one, and it's a lead-in to the next agenda item, but this is just a reminder of the 10-year capital facilities plan that was approved last year by the board. These were items that were going to be, or that are on the list to be completed through the use of the capital local levy, so just property taxes that we get annually. And we are, Hunter's currently in the process of updating that list and establishing new priorities for that. We're also visiting each of the schools and looking at some of the projects that principals and head custodians are needing done there. The second were lease revenue bond projects. That lease revenue bond has been issued, and these projects are now nearly underway. We'll approve the guaranteed maximum price on the Canyonview project this evening, I hope. And the bus garage transportation facility is in the planning stages. We're drawing up plans for that right now. So those are in progress. This is the big one, though. The projects that were to be funded through general obligation bonds, obviously the bond didn't pass. So that's what we're looking at when we talk about capital facilities needs discussion. In the next item is we still have these needs. Now, how are we going to go about meeting these needs or financing these projects or something else in that, in regards to those projects and those needs? Anything else on that, Lance?
So basically, we can't update this until we have the next conversation in the next item and until the board gives us a little bit of direction on which way we want to go, and then we'll build that into the next part of the 10-year plan. Yep.
Okay, questions on this item, or is the board ready to move to the next to discuss through? Okay, so we will go ahead and move into the capital facilities needs discussion.
If you had your board docs open for the last, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, you may want to refresh.
Okay.
Because we just updated that. We've tried to keep whatever we had on there so you could have something to look at, but we have been working right up until the meeting started to get the most update information and to make sure we had everything that the board asked for us to have. So you should be able to see the slides there. And we just kind of want to work through those. We're happy to stop at any point and take questions. We may not have the answers, but we're taking notes so we can come back with answers later.
So one question I had as we get into the school's capacity, because, you know, that's, I know that we do kind of a general capacity for the schools as they go through, but we hit, especially in Parowan, we hit a little bit problematic, is it's more about the classes than it is about the amount of people that are in there. Because, for instance, you could have very small classes, but they take up a classroom. And we only have X amount. We don't have any more classrooms over there. So is that accounted for? And I'm glad you changed that. I saw that the capacity with portables was just non-applicable. There wasn't anything in there. The amount of, how do we know, are we having that problem in other schools? Is Parowan the school that has that issue, or are we having that same problem in other schools?
Great question. And if we wanted to skip down to, let me see here, slide number, we're going to have to go a little ways.
Yeah,
slide number 29. So slide 29.
Yes.
I think one way that allows us to kind of see what you're talking about is the column there that says rooms dedicated to specials.
Okay.
To function in the most effective way, elementary schools ideally would have dedicated classrooms to each of the specials.
Yeah.
Specials are have two purposes. One is to allow the students exposure and learning in different content areas. For example, art or computer programming or something like that. But the other benefit, the other reason why elementary schools have that is so that teachers can have prep time.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of elementary teacher prep time compared to secondary teacher prep time is vastly different. Secondary teachers get a prep period every day. Elementary are lucky to have, an hour and a half a week. It's a problem, and we're constantly trying to figure out how to make that work. So if you look at these schools, for example, if you look at...
Project something, too.
Yeah.
It's during the specials when we have our special ed students integrate into general ed setting. In fact, almost exclusively, that's where those kids work in, because their needs are so vastly different, as you know, in the academic areas. But where those students can integrate, sincerely integrate with their peers it always happens in the specials.
Yes.
I know that. So that's just something important to note.
Absolutely. Thank you. And one thing that I would point out is at Parowan Elementary, if you see rooms dedicated to specials are zero.
Zero. Yeah.
So that means they have no special time besides library. When their kids go to library, the teacher has the opportunity to prep in their classroom. Every other special is happening in their classroom, and they don't have a very good opportunity to prepare things, to clean things up, or to whatever they need to do. A lot of these teachers in the elementaries are doing their prep time in a faculty lounge or somewhere where they don't really have access to their materials. And so
Three Peaks will slide into that same situation next year.
That's right.
Okay.
We also, when you look at some of these, for example, you might look at Enoch and say, well, they've got three, and all three of those classrooms are portables.
Oh, okay.
So just so that you know, almost all of these specials that are listed here are happening in portable classrooms.
And are there opportunities for, like, Three Peaks and Parowan for portables to come in that then become that space to help alleviate some of this strain?
Yes.
Okay.
And the problem with that I'd like to point out is it's pretty hard to do, especially art and STEM stuff, without water.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And portables don't have that.
That's right. That is a great point and something that we run into. So I think that kind of helps maybe to answer your question a little bit as far as just being able to quickly look and see where are we at with that kind of space.
I'm really trying hard, Board, to recognize there's other schools besides Parowan. So I did ask that question specifically. So.
Thanks for humoring us. Just a question. This might be obtuse, but maximum capacity is listed at 600, and yet enrollment is 418. And so it looks as though the discrepancy seems enormous. So if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, and it goes back to what Ben was saying about the number of classrooms. So in a school like Parowan, it's really difficult because you may have, for example, if you look at the bubble group for Parowan, it's fifth grade. They have 78 kids. That is a lot more than they normally have in a grade. They might have 48 kids in a regular grade. So you may have smaller classes, but you can't have 32 first graders in a class. So instead, we divide that up, and instead they have 16 kids in a class. Now, that's a small class. You're either really big or you're small in a school like Parowan. So it becomes really challenging. So that's why you can have an enrollment of 418 and yet have no extra classrooms to do anything in.
Great questions. I think for me it gets kind of hard because, like, when you try to look at this analytically, you look at it and you look at, like, for me, when I was looking at this, I just looked at capacity without portables, and then I went to enrollment. And obviously what you're saying is that data really isn't, it's not representative of much. So for me personally, I would like to see, I guess the only way to do it's kind of laborious, but to get each school and say, how many classrooms do we need at this school? Because to me, this, I guess, doesn't mean very much. This information doesn't. So I don't know how hard that would be, but I think knowing how many classrooms short we are at each facility is the only way to really look at it to make a plan, in my opinion.
And it is tough to answer that question because how many classrooms do you need?
Well, bubble groups. Right?
They are making it work right now.
And right.
So when we ask them, how many more do you need? Well, we've got it covered. But the way they've got it covered is teachers don't have prep time, and you know what I mean? So it's really complicated. So I guess your point is that it would be laborious, but I don't even know how we would totally answer that.
The question. The other thing is that say you went and built another school, that's not going to help Parowan with their problem.
No.
At all. So right. It's also hard to even say, well, this solution, maybe it works for a few elementaries, but not for Parowan, or, well, Escalante Valley's obviously way under, or appears to be. So, yeah, it's hard to, I guess, get a feel for where the lack really is, I guess is what I'm saying.
And where we will focus today, you'll see in most of our data, we are not focused on Parowan or E-Valley when it comes to the decisions about, the failed bond, because those solutions really didn't impact Parowan. So most of the data that you'll see today is really just about the Cedar City schools, and because that's the issue at hand. Now, Parowan is an issue, but we consider that kind of a separate issue because we need to look at that facility, its age, you know, all of those things, and that's going to be kind of a different type of conversation.
And, you know, Tyrell, and that's one thing to your point. I think we need to help our constituents understand this. Yeah. The thing I love and frustrates me about Southern Utah both is people are just willing to deal. They figure it out. They make it work. They run through that. That's a positive thing, but it also creates where we get into trouble, like us as a group trying to make these decisions, because we ask these questions to the schools, and the comments are, we can make it work. We'll make it work. And we've got such great people that do that day in and day out. And how do we understand where are we making it work that we could make different decisions or help our constituents understand the different decisions, you know, associated with that. I had an instance just with the track over in Parowan just recently, and it was really interesting because the same individual was frustrated with the tax increase, the levy tax increase. And they asked, well, why doesn't Parowan get a new track? Why isn't? And so I showed them exactly on the sheet how it's there listed under our dollars from the increased tax levy. And it was interesting to see their understanding. Oh, so that's why we're doing what we're doing. And I think our constituents miss that some of the time.
Can you remind me, because I'm looking at slide 29, what it says October 1 enrollment, what is the percentage that is preferred with you've got your maximum capacity? But it seems like last time you told us what that percentage was to have things running smoothly.
Well, we kind of look at the adjusted capacity as the one that's okay. The one that matches the board established ratio of student to teacher.
Okay.
That we use for our calculations of how many teachers we provide to the schools.
So adjusted capacity is the ideal.
Yes. So maximum would be if we took every single space and we filled up every classroom with 30 kids in the elementary, 35 kids in the secondary schools. So these numbers are really just about the facility itself, these maximum capacity and adjusted capacity. But once where it gets complicated is when you're looking at programs. So you have a facility that technically could have this many students, but as soon as you have programs, now you have a dedicated space for this or a dedicated space for that, and it doesn't calculate out that way. So those numbers are always going to be higher than reality when it comes to making a school work on a day in and day out basis.
And for me, that's the key, is when we're trying to sell this to the general public, if they see the maximum capacity and then they see the enrollments, immediately they're going to say, oh, we got tons of room. Right. Mm-hmm. No, you don't understand. I think we need to be really, really careful on how we describe this, because the only way a school could ever hit maximum capacity would be if the stars aligned, students were brought in on unicorns, and we had magically this perfect amount of first graders and kindergartens, and it's just never going to happen.
Right. So we have exactly 25 in every classroom, yeah. Mm-hmm. And all of those things would have to be.
Mm-hmm. And you say the capacity is based off a 25 student classroom.
In the elementaries.
Uh-huh. And so when you have an elementary class that's bigger, you just consider that running over. I mean, it's obviously not ideal. That's your target that you want, 25.
Yes.
That's correct. Smaller.
Actually, smaller in, I'm generalizing, but in kindergarten and first grade, I think it's actually 23, and then it gets to 25 once you're in fourth and fifth grade.
But it is so hard to hit that mark because, yeah, you get 60 kids in Parowan, first graders, what are you going to do? Are you going to have
two classes of 30?
Yeah, two classes of 30 or three classes of 20.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it becomes a problem.
And we have kids moving out and moving in constantly. So it's fluctuating, yeah, all the time.
Do you have an elementary school teacher for 2 or 3 years that has 30 kids every year? They're not going to keep them very long.
And I've experienced that throughout my career. You get to 32 or so in an elementary, and it feels like you have 10 more. Mm-hmm. And I have seen teachers, you know, bail after 2 or 3 years of that, just because it's very hard to manage.
Yeah, once you cross the threshold and lose control, it's... might as well be 100. Cause
well, and you're not teaching them, you're not getting them to grade level with their reading.
And that's
or their
where
math, but that's
the danger is our best teachers. Our best teachers are the ones who care and are trying to get every kid where they, and they're the ones that get so frustrated that they end up going somewhere else or doing something different.
So if I'm understanding this slide correctly, it looks like right now Iron Springs, Three Peaks, And what was the other one I was looking at? There's three of them that are basically over capacity right now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what was the other one?
Yeah, South is really close. Iron Springs,
Three Peaks,
and I think it was South.
And that's where all the subdivisions
and East
are
is,
going.
East is very close.
Yeah, Three Peaks and Iron Springs, especially.
Yeah.
So let's go back to slide number two.
Yep.
And we'll just work our way through the information. I think it's really good for us to have kind of a step back and have a bigger perspective. Mm-hmm. This is all coming from the Gardner Policy Institute from the University of Utah. To my knowledge, they're the only ones in the state that really go after this data. You can see the slide number two is about Utah in general, and a look at, based on the data, a prediction of what 2030 will look like, 2040, 2050, and 2060. Obviously, that's a long way out, but that's the purpose of their study.
Can I point one thing out on that?
Please, yeah.
So I looked into this a little deeper. So if you're wondering, like, well, how do they project that far in? They're basing it off of, oh, geez, what's the... If I use the biology term, you guys will never let me...
Birth rates?
It's sort of like that. So you take, they're called bide factors. So you have birth, immigration, emigration, death. But the birth rates, let's do it that way. The birth rates need to be about 2 for a population to stay steady. So essentially as parents, if you have 2 kids, you're essentially replacing yourself in the next generation. Anything below 2 would be a dip. They are basing these projections off of a current birth rate index. So we're assuming people don't start having more kids or something like that later. So I think they projected it like 1.77.
Yes.
And so if it keeps going on that, this is what you'll see. But again, it's a projection into the future. Who knows what will happen in 20, 30, 40 years.
But they're also taking into account, we'll see some information on the immigration piece of it or the people moving in. And I think they do a really good job of looking at all the pieces.
Can I just ask when this was published out of the Gardner Center?
Good. It was last year, I believe.
Yeah, they keep it updated annually.
Annually?
Yeah. Yeah, so this is 20. I think I received it spring of 2023.
Okay.
That's what I remember. But the most recent data was 2022 was the data that they used, and they published it in 2023. That's my understanding. I really like slide 3. This is the school age population. This isn't population overall. And you can see the counties that will see a negative growth and those who see positive. The darker red, obviously, the more, Utah County is going to keep seeing a lot of additional. Washington County is going to see a lot of growth in student population. But we are right there, below the top ones with 20% prediction. That's a 2,401 students added between 2020 and 2060. I know that's a long time, but it doesn't take very many students in a school to kind of put it over the edge there.
Well, and I couldn't help think that with Washington County's growth, that could very well affect us as well. I mean, we could affect their growth as well, but still, that together, that could be an issue.
And then the school age population, if you want to see the numbers, the prediction is that by 2060, we'll have 14,261 students residing within our county that we have in physical schools.
How did you calculate that percentage with, how many out-of-county students do we have on Iron Online?
Now, this number is not ours. This is the number from
from Kindergartners
Gardner Institute. So they just took the current numbers of 2020 numbers, which
did we calculate 20% into the full Iron County school, like you when you did your math? Was that into the 12,000 students, or was that into a prorated 20% to see how much that 20% growth is?
Are you talking back on this slide here?
Yeah, so it's 20%.
This is their calculation again.
Right, so if we times
just
that, so
school age.
Right, so how many school age kids do we have in our district right now is what I'm saying, I guess, that are not on Iron Online?
Oh, in our schools?
Just in our school, because then if I times 25, that by 20%, I'll know what our actual growth rate will be.
Gotcha. Our current enrollment district-wide without, let's see, online. It's about 10,500. It's right
so
in there.
So roughly 2,000.
Yeah.
Which I think what you said, Lance.
Yeah. So, and the Gardner Institute's just calculating if that happens, then by 2060 we'll have 14,261 students that reside here, as opposed to the 10,500 that we have right now.
We might actually have that in another slide later, but
okay.
And then in slide 5. This is the Iron County population growth estimates from the Policy Institute. And it's just, let's see.
Well, they're taking into consideration the port and the fact that we have a rail line here.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to think ahead.
So there's the number 2060. You're almost to 100,000 people in the total population, which is a huge increase. But the better graph is on slide 6. I like this one a little better because you can see 2030. That's a little more easy for me to comprehend. That, you know, in 2020, the population was 57,658. I think in the current population, the last number I heard was 66,000.
I thought it showed 71 on this.
John?
2025. Oh, 70,000, 28.
So they're predicting 77,000 in 2030, 5 years from now. Yeah, we may already. So we're at least halfway there from the 2020 number. But this kind of helps with the key findings, and you know we didn't do the study, but we feel like we're grateful that somebody who knows more than us has put that together. In slide 7 are the major events in the projects. I think they make a good point with the economic developments that we have in our county. Port 15 is a huge deal, and we haven't even really begun to see the impact of that. Iron Springs Megasite, the 419 acres, the Cedar City Regional Airport is mentioned, and this is where, under assumptions, is where they've listed out they're assuming a, you know, the TFR, the total fertility rate.
It gives you a number.
There. And that could change. It could increase or it could decrease. We don't know. Life expectancy is predicted to increase over the next several years. And then that just brings us to slide 8 with the population growth estimates. Overall population between now and 2060 is considered to be a 70.1% increase in that. Who knows? I guess, you know, all kinds of things could happen, but It's interesting to see what they have put there. I'll turn it over to Todd for the next several slides.
Okay, so one of the questions was, where is the growth occurring? We have access to a piece of software that's connected with PowerSchool where we can map our student enrollment and see where students are, what schools they're attending, what grade they're in. And they do a study each year where they reach out to local officials and developers and identify development areas, and then they try and predict what enrollment will be and where the students are going to be from that study that they do and analysis. This is a map that kind of shows the developments that they have identified. I think this is still a work in progress. We're not 100% confident in the numbers that they give us in the study yet, but I think once they get a few years under their belts, you know, it'll get better and better as they go. But you can see outlined in red some of the developments, like I said, that they identified. Hunter and I took a drive around and took some pictures of some of these. That's what I was adding right before the meeting, so that's where the extra slides have come in. And those of you who know real estate locally a little better than I do, if there are mistakes, please correct me on those. We'll fix the slides or we'll fix the information if we need to. But Bower Meadows, which is south, on the south end of Cedar City, is a big development that is just getting started out there. This is close to our high school and elementary sites, future sites anyway, potential future sites, I guess I should say. Iron West, we're all, I think, familiar with that one. Maybe not as familiar as I am because I drive past this every single day twice, in and out from work, but a pretty good sized development out there, well underway, still several phases, I believe, remaining out there. Iron Crest, which is across Highway 56 to the north of Iron West. Point West. And a lot of these are duplexes and townhomes, some single family residents. Scenic, which is another one, just getting underway. Magnolia Fields, you can see some of the townhomes that are being built there already. Fiddler's Cove, this is an interesting one, just right above Fiddler's Elementary School. We're not, you're seeing a lot of build out there. These right here? Yeah. Oh, you're talking about these back here?
Yeah.
Out in here?
Yeah.
So what's interesting with all these townhomes here, and it looks like a lot of them have been moved into, we're not seeing a lot of students yet coming out of those. We don't know if that's that the kids are too young and they haven't reached that, you know, age 5 and started elementary school yet, or if you're just seeing people move there without kids.
I think those were kind of on the higher price side of things, so.
Could be some of that. Might be apartments. Okay. We have found, and Hunter could maybe speak to this a little better than I can, but we have found, he's run some analysis on a few of the higher density developments in the city, and the student per unit ratio is not really extremely high in many of those. We're really seeing the students come from the single family residence.
Yeah, we again, we ran our study, and we're in the process of updating that, but the last time we ran about 2,000 units throughout the community, and our ratio for elementary was 0.19 students per unit. So fairly low that was a combination of apartments, of townhomes, of duplexes, single-story, two-story, kind of across the board for our higher density, medium to higher density homes. And so for the, it was a little bit lower even for the secondary, I think it was 0.15 students per unit for secondary age students, but at least it gives us a fairly decent number based on the data that we currently have to, you know, project out and say, okay, if we're seeing this quantity of townhomes or, you know, medium to high density units constructed, we can anticipate roughly this amount of elementary age student in it. So it gives us a good reading of what impacts that's going to be. It was 0.19 students for elementary and 0.15 students for secondary. Now, as we update that, that's probably about a year old data. I don't anticipate that it has changed significantly, but obviously there would be some change to that number probably.
Of all these developments, and I'm sorry, I don't know, of all these developments that you've shown, how many are not high density? How many are single family houses? Because
Iron West has probably, I would say, the highest percentage of single family detached homes in comparison. Now that's in the Iron Springs boundary and the Three Peaks boundary. Peak View is a subdivision that probably has the highest amount of single family homes as well.
There are some other developments that haven't quite started yet. There are coming on,
yeah, that are
in
on
those
the
areas
list.
As well.
Yeah, of those that are currently rolling and are at a pretty good speed of progression in their development, those are probably the two bigger subdivisions that we've been tracking.
Well, and there's two, I know where I'm at in the south over on Westview area, there's a big subdivision going in there with all single homes. Lots, and some of them are not, don't have kids, but a lot of them do. And then there's also, as you come over by the hotels, up kind of, on the hotels on the old highway.
Mm-hmm.
There's a ton of growth out there too.
Yeah.
What we're seeing in those areas, based on conversations that we've had with real estate professionals and so on and so forth, is we're the majority of this on the south end is retirees. I mean, at the price points for the homes and everything else, we're not currently seeing a huge influx on this side. Now west, we're still seeing the influx of students in single family homes and R1 subdivisions. So
with these that you're looking at, have you looked at the subdivisions and things that are proposed over by Pair One?
Mm-hmm. We're currently doing that. We've looked at a couple of them that that Alex Meisner has
400 homes,
correct,
coming in. I mean, we only have 1,200 homes total in Pair One now.
Correct.
You bring 400 more homes in, that makes a difference. It does. But then they finished All American Builders, I think, have finished all of those homes, and they are at a lower price point, mm-hmm, which will then likely bring families in.
We'll pull on those particular areas through our predictive enrollment, which is a software that we use that pulls. So as soon as a student is enrolled in Power School, then that information is pulled into our software that we can plot the students where they're at.
Okay.
And so the easiest thing for us to do in those situations is to plot those areas, be able to get the information from the developer on the total quantity of units, and then be able to see, you know, what the growth rate is.
Yeah, and I'm calling my Paramount people out. Anybody who's listening to this, you didn't vote for the bond. You know, that's a challenge. We become our own worst enemies so many times in this, and we see that it's just frustrating to me that we want solutions to this without providing resources for those solutions. So I'll get some mean phone calls.
So to what you were saying, persons per household is going down. That's what it shows on this chart. But with these new developments, I don't think there's a lot of young families that can afford a $3,000 a month mortgage. It's not that they wouldn't be, but it affects, I guess, yeah, what we end up with, because they literally can't afford,
right,
to move into those homes.
It
because
is,
of the interest
and obviously that demographic can change, but as of the really accurate data that we have,
right,
in medium to high density households right now, we're, you know, and that's, those we're still seeing, you know, the $300,000 to $400,000 price points on some townhomes and
so $3,500 a month.
Correct. Yeah. And so we're just, yeah. Now, again, if rates come down and some of that, that obviously could impact that data that we have. But as of right now, that's, you know, that trend has tracked for a couple of years now with those ratios in the medium to higher density.
Have you seen anything in multi-generation households?
It hasn't been something that we've really delved into much at this point. But
I think we will see some of that just in my husband's background, and Tyrell, you can probably speak to it. We've started seeing that request as far as new homes being built multi-generational.
So. We're building a house right now, and my wife mandated that there was room in the basement for the kids to live when they get older. So,
and Tyrell, I think you're going to see in some of these next graphs some of the effects of what you're saying,
okay,
too. As we look at enrollment in some of the schools over the last 5 years. So these are your Cedar Area Elementary School enrollments for the last 5 years with total enrollment in those. You do see some declines in the last 3 years there. When we get into the individual schools, so here's East Elementary School. You'll notice while Cedar Area Schools' total enrollment has dropped a little bit, East Elementary has actually increased in its enrollment in the last 3 years, and it looks like I didn't update some numbers here. I apologize. My one mistake for today. Just kidding. So those numbers at the top aren't quite correct there. This last one is. That's current enrollment at East. And so some of the people who can't afford the new homes are moving into the older homes that are becoming vacant, you know, in the older parts of town. And there's North. We did the boundary realignment in 2022, and we moved quite a few students out of the Iron Springs and Three Peaks boundaries into the North Elementary boundary. So that's that big jump there in 2022. South, again, we did move some students into South with the 2022 boundary realignment. But it's also growing some in South as people move into the older parts of town. And look at that kindergarten. Nope, wasn't kindergarten. Well, that kindergarten right there in 2023, 93. If you go back to East, kindergarten this year was really big, 111. Enoch Elementary. We're seeing it start to slow down out there. Fiddlers is slowing quite a bit. Now, Fiddlers and East do have the dual immersion programs. We're not seeing, at least, Steve in here?
No, he's not. That's true.
The Chinese dual immersion program is not as popular as the Spanish. So those numbers are declining a little bit there. Then Iron Springs, we got up to 682 students in 2021. The boundary realignment dropped that to 619, came back up to 652. Then we had a little small decline this year out at Iron Springs. Three Peaks, similar story. Almost hit 700. In fact, during the year, we did hit 700 students, but as of October 1st, we only had 698. Then the boundary realignment, and then right back, not quite back up, but just hovering right around that 650 mark. From what I hear this year with kindergarten registration at Three Peaks, it's another big year. Or we're expecting a big year. There's Parowan.
So are you, Elementary. I mean, with Enoch going down, is there any thoughts of pushing Three Peaks?
So we'll do a boundary realignment when East opens up in 2026. So another year from now. Gotcha. Until then, we won't probably make many changes. Won't be able to or won't want to. Parowan's an interesting story, Ben, because you go back further than this and you actually get up back up into the 400s. Yeah. There's kind of a lull and then back up. But it hovers right around that 420 mark the last 4 years. Then Escalante Valley, we didn't want to leave anybody out, so we're going to leave, going to show Escalante Valley as well. They have seen some increases in the last 5 years out there, a few students. Okay, and then we're back to that capacity slide. Tyrell, you asked about classroom counts. I actually do have an older, I was just looking at my spreadsheet where I've got a lot of this data, and I have an older tab that does have some classroom counts on it. I'll update that, and we'll try and get that information out to you.
And I just remembered that I worked with the elementary schools in preparation for the bond last year, and we have a list of exactly how many classrooms each school would need to be able to function optimally. I've been trying to find it, and I can't, but I will find it, and I'll get it out to you guys.
Yeah. If we could actually put that in this presentation to make available to the public, because this is clearly a discussion that we're going to have with with the entire community. And that one slide is really misleading until you, without the ability to drill in, because it's just going to be that much more powerful to direct the public to that kind of information so they understand that a third grade class has 78 students, and when children need to be reading by the end of third grade, we want to make sure that we have lower class sizes, so that's going to mean we have three rooms, and maybe we have to bump up fifth to be bigger, but the public needs to see that very specific data, and I remember that slide.
We shared it with the board, so I know it's in board docs.
Monica just found it.
Was it the August meeting?
Oh, Monica.
Yes, that's it. That was in the August meeting?
It was in the general election bond timeline and process.
And
just
we do
somehow put that into this presentation. I think it would be very helpful.
We do have the information on closed schools because of capacity, but also closed grade levels at different schools that might be helpful in understanding.
Yeah, I think some average class size information with it would be really good.
Obviously, to what Stephanie said, if I was given this document just as a citizen, I'd say, well, they're fine, except for a few schools that they're doing great. I mean, we got capacity everywhere, but now that I understand that better, obviously that's crucial for them to know. So, but I get the challenge you guys are faced with trying to convey that. I don't know. It's not lost.
And the capacity without portables at Pair 1 is 500.
Well, and I think it's important to remember that whenever you do research, you take multiple points of research. Uh-huh. And so actually going into the schools and actually seeing the situation is a really good indicator as well.
Do you want students per square foot?
But I mean, I've actually seen it with my very own eyes, is what I'm saying. There's another data point there. But then I'm wondering also, did they take into account the baby bump they're expecting from COVID? Because I think this next year, not this year, not this coming year, but it'll be the following year, there was a baby bump.
I've been waiting for one. We hope it comes.
Another thing, what about East Elementary's, the new East Elementary's projected capacity? That's something I'd like to see
we'll
as
have
well.
That in there.
And maybe.
Which I think that was on there, right? The projected capacity as is if we don't realign.
Well, I'm just saying once the new one's online.
Yeah.
What's the new?
Around 800.
Mm-hmm. We have more classrooms there than we do at the current North Elementary. So.
Which is why you're going to have a big boundary realignment.
Right.
So, and so I guess it's kind of hard because we're all shooting at a moving target here. But if you go up to 800 from 525, that's 175. And it shares a boundary with who? South?
South.
And North?
Fiddlers and North.
South, all three. So all those schools will see potentially some alleviation. Okay.
Well, and the goal is to even shift. I mean, you won't take from Three Peaks and Iron Springs and put directly into East, but as we move students out of North and out of South, we can move students from those others into those as well.
If you refresh your board docs and open that same document, you'll now have slide number 30 which is what we're on right now. And that's the slide that I was thinking of from before. Thank you. Thank you, Monica, for finding that. But North is saying they're lacking 4 classrooms to function ideally right now. 3 Peaks, 8 rooms would be needed at East, 6 rooms at Enoch, 5 rooms at South, 4 rooms, Fiddler's, 5 rooms, Iron Springs, 6 rooms, and Parowan, 1 portable.
And this is a little bit outdated, right? Based on the previous slide, like 3 Peaks, they have 1 art room that's going to be a classroom next year, so they'll...
Yeah, so they're even making more changes since August, so...
The other question I had was, with these calculations, that includes, 1, the specials, but 2, where are we at as far as number of students on IEPs? How does that factor into teacher load? Because it's very different if you've got 25 kids and 5 IEPs, or 25 kids and half of them are on IEPs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As we're having this discussion, and to speak to that, do we do flexible spaces a lot, where you can take a single classroom and divide it into 6 first things just like that? I mean, obviously you can just stick them in a room, but to me it seems like our schools really do need spaces that are kind of modular almost.
Well, and that's what a lot of these schools are saying. How do we address individual needs? How do we work with a small group when there's no place to put
to
them?
Work with them?
We're often pulling them into a hallway or in a closet.
Yeah.
So there, I mean, at Parowan Elementary, they have to put up with the noise of the servers or something right there, you know, because they're in this little closet. So that's, and that's what's hard for people to understand, is we make it work right now. It works, but we needed more space a long time ago for things to function the way they should. And because we haven't been able to do that, we've just found a way, but it's not the best way. It's not ideal, or, you know, it's not something that most parents would want, to have their kids in, you know, not being able to have a place to do art or a place to have one-on-one instruction for their child when they need it. Anyway, we do, on to slide 31, the board asked for some information here, and we don't have great data for this, but it is challenging at Gateway, as it is challenging for our numbers. We are able to pull our numbers apart from those who reside in our county and those who don't. But Gateway does something similar to what we do as far as offering some online classes to students that don't live within the county. So their number is a little bit harder to pin down, but we know that they're around 650, between 650 and 700. And
when is the grades that goes through?
They go through 8th grade.
Kindergarten through 8th grade with 650 to 700 students.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure, because that was really a lot if it was just K through 5.
They go through 8th.
Okay.
And then American Principals Academy is 209. That's the best, most, that's the October 1 count. So that's the only number we could find.
I think it's like 211 right now. It's K through 8. The anticipated enrollment of kindergarten next year and first grade, they're really high. They're right around 30. But I would mention that capacity would be 300, and the school has been very active in trying to solicit enrollment. And it's a great program. It's a program that's not for everyone, but I don't believe that it's going to be over. It's not going to be over 240 next year. It's not going to. It takes some time for charters to develop a reputation, to refine their programming. So we are
3 more years from them being at capacity.
Okay.
At least. Hold
That's
me to that.
Know.
A great program, but it takes, as you know, it takes some time to get lift.
And only a fraction of the 209, right, came from our
46% were homeschool.
Homeschool, yeah.
So we're looking at roughly 100, 100 and about 100 actually. And we're not going to be more than, well, at any rate.
Well,
that's
but
where we are right now.
And it also depends, we don't have the demographics, but it's 100 kids spread out over eight grades out of all of our schools. So you could have taken 2 kids out of, you know, each grade, and it doesn't make a significant impact in those
impact
classroom sizes.
The number
sizes.
Of classrooms you need.
Yeah.
I'm going to flip really quickly back up to this, just to kind of show the effect of that, to this slide. Notice our enrollment in Cedar Area elementary schools dropped from 4,109 to 4,037. You know, that's fewer than the number that went to APA. So if you were to pull those students back in, we would have seen net growth this year at our elementary schools. Just a thought.
Slide 32 has to do with the alternative programs. It's just some information for you to chew on. At Launch High School, we have an enrollment of 200, only 100 students at a time, and they alternate every other day. New applicants, 100 to 120 per year, and the seats available per year, because they have kids graduate, they only have about 60 to 70 spots per year. So that's showing, we just wanted to show that the need there. SEA, even more so, you have referrals, 116 this year referrals to alternative programs. The vast majority of those, the schools refer hoping that they can get into SEA. You've seen a drop from last year, it was 170, and that's mostly because the schools are doing more and more. We have added a position at each of the high schools for them to have kind of a school-based SEA for those who don't get in because we just don't have enough room. And so they've been able to keep some kids, and they also recognize that SEA just can't take everybody. So they've kind of slowed down the referrals a little bit. But still, obviously, 116 referrals is impossible for us to bring on to SEA's campus. The need is far greater than the capacity.
Do we have a percentage of those that actually got in? Like, if you referred 116, how many of those 116 actually got to go?
We can find that.
What's the capacity at SEA?
The most they can have, if they maxed everything out, is about 75.
And I'm assuming that fluctuates, too, based on grade and where
Yeah, and it does fluctuate quite a bit. Well, the number doesn't fluctuate that much, but the kids fluctuate because we'll have early graduates a lot. We'll graduate early, and so we'll have room, so we'll bring on another kid. So it does change, at least the...
So, like, in October, you might have nothing, but by January, you could have some spots, but it just... Yeah, I'm just curious about how many of the 116 actually were able to attend.
Yeah, I should be able to tell you here just a second.
I guess that's my question, too, is do you got a feel for the overall need for Launch and SEAs? Like, if we had more room, would they fill?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yes.
No, I'm just wondering, like, percentage-wise, is it a, you know, if we had a wait list, is it going to be double this? Is it... Give me an idea.
Well, speaking to just the SEA side of things, the answer is yes, because we could, again, at SEA, we're taking 11th and 12th graders. We could bump that down to 10th graders and grow a little bit that way. To Launch, launch could grow based on just their number of referrals, and that you can see what's available as per their applicants, so you can kind of see the percentage there, but there's room for both those programs.
Are they exclusively drawn from pools in Iron County? Is this all schools refer to these two programs, and it's exclusively from just Iron County?
Dr. Hatch, question. How many of those 75 students are those that we are absorbing because of Crimson or Chrysalis placements?
We're not counting in the 75 the Coal Creek students. So those are separate.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're separate classroom.
Okay.
That's a very small number, though, that participate in that.
Okay. Thank you.
So hypothetically speaking, anything we increase with this is a decreased capacity or increased capacity for our other high schools in the area.
Mm-hmm. Potentially. So. There's also a lot of these students end up with on Mentor, which is an online program and stuff, because they're it's just not working at the school. If I count all of them that went to SEA, it's 73. But you need to understand, some of them went in quarter two, some of them went in quarter three, some of them went in. So they have their students that were there last year, came back, and then there's a certain number that they can fill in. But of those 116 referrals, 73 ended up at different times at SEA.
And I guess the reason I asked that question is I think wait lists are, they tend to undershow the need potentially, because if the wait list gets so long, you're like, well, I'm not even going to refer.
Don't even try.
Yeah, I'm just not even going to try. That's why I'm wondering, do we have a sense for, because it's a hot place where kids would really like to,
well, and
to go. And that,
and with SEA, it's kind of the opposite of launch. At launch, we have, these are the kids, this is where kids want to go. We have 120 per year who want to go there, and we can't take them. It's kind of the opposite at SEA. It's the schools referring, and every once in a while they'll go there kicking and screaming, but then they love it and it works for them. That's basically kind of the story each time. But these are schools, the school is referring, but even that is affected by what you're saying, because the schools recognize they do not have the capacity. So they're doing something different. They're, which is good. We want them to try something. But we just have a lot of kids who we know if they could access the services at SEA like the other kids that, who are currently at SEA, they would succeed at a higher level. And so we just don't have the room.
I guess that's what worries me the most, is that our job is to provide top-notch education to meet the needs of the people who actually live in this county. And if this is a need, we're not doing our jobs. And that worries me.
Well, and that's my thought about launch as well. I mean, we've heard about that for years, that, you know, oh, you just can't get in, you can't get in. That I think if there was more capacity and there was more of a chance, I bet we'll always have a wait list for launch because of the style and the grade of teacher that's over there. But still, I think we could serve a lot more kids. Mm-hmm. And it could decrease our need to build a high school sooner or, you know, later.
So we just got a text from Steve Schofield, who must be listening in, saying that the switch to mini quarters this year was just to accommodate more students. That was a big part of that.
That was that.
Yeah.
But also brilliant.
Successful, yeah.
Yep, very successful. We the alternative programs options, this is coming straight from our 2024 bond. One option is to construct a new facility, obviously. We priced that at $30 million for the 2024 bond. We're just going to kind of go through a bunch of the options and try to give you all the information you need to be able to have your conversation, but what if the programs were located at the high schools? What if we just said, we don't need a building, we'll just push them into the high schools? The SEA could potentially do that, But then the teachers would be spread out with, you know, just a few teachers at each building, and they'd have to rely on the EdNet system and other broadcasting systems, and they'd lose that personal touch, which is actually the magic of SEA. And I'm not sure that it would accomplish what it's accomplishing right now if we were to do something like that. Launch, it is just simply unrealistic to split that program up into many different buildings. Iron Online could potentially be housed because we're really just talking about office space, but office space is hard to come by in our schools. So that option really doesn't appear to be a great one. What if the programs on slide 35 were located in the current South Elementary building? This is resurrecting an old idea. What would that look like? In the upper level, you could see how Launch High School could spread out and make that whole upper level their campus.
Would that increase capacity?
Yes. I haven't done exact numbers on that, but it would clearly increase.
Do you know how many classrooms they currently have, roughly?
Classrooms?
None.
Well,
one.
I think it's one.
Sorry. How many structures that they have?
Classrooms with wheels?
So they have one, I think, that would be considered a classroom, and then they have their makerspace downstairs. It's more than just makerspace. The one portion is makerspace. The other portion is desks, chairs, you know, tables, places where students can work.
So it's a small
and collaborate.
Small facility.
Yeah, very small over there.
Is there advantages to this one because of the close proximity to Southwest Tech and to SUU for students that are maybe taking some of those classes or taking some of the opportunities from there? It just seems where it's so centralized in the middle of that for students that with all of these programs that there would be huge opportunities there.
Well, that has been a pro all along for this option, is that the location is really nice for Southwest Tech and SUU. So definitely that would be a benefit. If you look at the next slide, you can see the lower level.
Sorry.
And this is kind of a concept idea of how SEA could be laid out. Where it says Coal Creek and Iron Online, we kind of envision that those programs would be housed elsewhere, probably in the trailers that are currently SEA is in. The reason we would want to do that is, number one, we'd have an administrator over there because Iron Online would be located there. Number two, that's really the only way we're going to be able to grow SEA like we want to. We need those classrooms for SEA. This was developed by Steve, and all he did was say, could I house everything in this location? And I would argue that we don't necessarily need to house everything in this location. What we really need is to make sure that we're answering the question or dealing with the problem of lack of capacity at SEA. So I would be pushing for that all of those classrooms to be SEA classrooms.
And again, that would increase capacity for SEA.
Mm-hmm. Yes, a lot. It would basically double it. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
But it also, we'd have issues with elementary capacity.
Yes.
And you're talking about some of the growth happening in the downtown area.
Yeah.
Yes. So that will take us to some of the elementary solutions, right? So right now we've just talked about alternative programs. If we switch gears to elementaries, one of the solutions
I just wanted to voice one thing. I like this idea of using South
as designed. I think I agree with you with the Coal Creek and Iron Online maybe going elsewhere, mainly because of the idea of the makerspace for launch. I'm not sure that's enough space to actually be a makerspace. And if you had two next door makerspace spaces, bump the faculty training room downstairs. I just think to do what they want to do in launch and probably in SEA, you're going to need that whole building.
When you have the gym, per se, that you could use mm-hmm. as a makerspace as well.
And I've been thinking a lot about how can you use that gym space,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But how many years does South really have? Did you say 10? 15?
Hunter?
Like it's still a Band-Aid, right?
Yeah, I mean, we feel like we've still got, you know, 10 to 12, 12 to 15, where we updated the HVAC system there. Our biggest issue is we've got some areas that have some settling in them. But, again, it's an area that in the lower level that, per the way we've got it laid out right now, could be, it's a larger kindergarten room. It could be used for some other areas. I mean, we can look at putting some.
Well, and I think the multipurpose building is a good example of this, where Success Academy is at. That building was at the end of its life. Mm-hmm. We retrofitted it for that purpose, and it works well for Success Academy and continues to work well and has for, you know, a significant amount of years. And so I think there is a lot of life if it's retrofitted. We're not dealing with elementary students. We're not dealing with the same safety issues, the same protocol with that. So I would agree that there is more life than there is as an elementary school.
Do you have a rough number on retrofitting it? I can't remember what that was when we initially had these conversations. It's going to be less than the 30 mil to bring
it's
a
coming
new
up.
Building. Oh, it is? I thought it wasn't in here. Sorry. I apologize.
It was added just earlier today. So.
Never mind. Keep going.
Okay. Well, we had a carefully thought out plan here. So adding wings to Iron Springs and Three Peaks. So that is an option. It would cost about $6.3 million at each location to do that. We could fit an additional 8 classrooms per building. If we were to fill those classrooms with 25 students per classroom, that's 200 per school, and that would be 400 total. And it would really provide a lot of additional capacity. There are things to consider in this option that I think are very important. First, we would need to move a portable or get rid of a portable in order to make room for these additions. If we got rid of one, then we're not increasing the capacity as much anymore. One other thing that we need to think about is the administrative load. An additional 200 students in a building, you know, puts them well over 800. Probably closer to 900. And what would that result in? Think about right now at Three Peaks, if you were to go and spend some time in the cafeteria during lunch, they have to start serving lunch really early as it is to get through all of those students. And it's packed. So you add another 200 students, you start to overextend the basic functionality of the school overall. Can you fit that many classes through the library on a schedule? Can you fit, you see what I mean? Now you have more students who need intervention, but you don't have a place to do intervention. So there are negatives. There's a negative side to having to this option. However,
also with
the
positive, administrative load.
Yeah.
It's almost like you'd need two principals there.
You have a principal and assistant. You might need another assistant.
Yeah.
Well, and my concern is you're going to lose that sense of community. Every time we go to the schools, it's like, oh, this is a family, this community. I mean, I was even just looking at research right here that says you start getting above 300, you lose that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I go to Three Peaks, not Three Peaks, sorry, I go to Iron Springs once a week. And trying, and I don't know how you would do this, but trying to even get in there to park right now, and I mean, it is ridiculous with the size it is now. Mm-hmm. If I'm not in that parking lot by a certain period of time, I'm literally can't turn off 56 to even get in there. So if you're adding 200 kids,
eight more teachers.
Yeah, we have space for aides. Classroom, sure, but you're gonna the parking and the bus. There's no way. We are lined up on 56 trying to turn off a highway at 55 miles an hour to turn to try and get into an elementary school. There's no room for that. So
the way there is just trying to.
Yeah. So
convince parents to put their kids on the bus if they fall outside.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's a creative idea. I'm not going to take it off the table.
Yeah.
It is creative, but the concerns are definitely more than one concern.
There's and I don't want to, you know, be too much of a downer on the idea because it would provide additional capacity. And the cost is less than building a new building, about half of the cost. So the next slides just show you what that would look like if we were to add those eight classrooms to each of the buildings. So the first one there is Iron Springs, and then the next one on slide 39 is Three Peaks.
So the new part are the two side pieces, those two?
Yeah, the ones that are drawn into the playground blacktop area.
Right here.
Just sticking into the playground.
Okay, gotcha.
How would these be paid?
Well, that is a good question. And at the end of this presentation, we have
all the
basically
options.
Your two options
okay.
of how you would pay for these.
Yeah.
And would we be able to have more playground space if we did that? I mean, it's not taking around too much space, but you wouldn't expand the playground space? Okay.
Well, slide 40 shifts gears again now, and we probably should have put this one up above, but building out the basement at CHS is one of the ideas that's been brought up. That's an expensive venture because that's a very challenging site.
And a lot of risk.
And our best estimate is about $9.3 million is what that would cost. What it would do is potentially increase to seven classrooms. If we did that, it would be we'd be able to house about 210 students. Now, that would be a potential site for SEA or a potential site for launch, but not both. You wouldn't be able to do both there. If you did one or the other, you would be potentially increasing the number of students that could participate. But if you're doing SEA, you're not increasing by 210 students. I mean, that's if you had 30 students in every class. SEA's whole point is that you have smaller class sizes. So we usually have, 15, 16, 17 kids per class.
You'd have issues with makerspace.
Right, and what's the safety issue down there? I mean, I know we'll make it safe per structure, but it just doesn't seem safe to be stuck in a basement, although it is a fallout shelter, fine.
You realize that East Side has leakage issues that it fills with water, so they'd have to rip that whole site out.
Well, there's some mitigation items that we'd have to do there. I mean, we already have classrooms in the basement, so I mean, it's not that we're adding something that's not already there. It would just be building out the existing space that was never there.
Where would you put the equipment that's down there?
What's that?
Where would you put all? Would it take out the equipment spaces too?
It would.
So you'd have to move those.
We would.
Well, I would recommend if we do this, Cedar's welcome to come over to Parowan to our new batting cages that we're going to build that are indoor. So hey, I'm excited about that.
We can use those. Tiffany, before you ask, Windows, not likely. In the basement.
How did you know I was going to ask about natural light and the mental impact it makes on our students and our teachers?
I know. But that's one of the downsides, you know, you're building in the basement, so.
All kids need is the glow of an LCD screen in the form of a phone. They do not need natural light.
So slide 42, as we move along, we keep kind of going back and forth between elementary and secondary. I apologize for that. But the New South would have to be a consideration by the board if we were to convert the current South into an alternative programs facility. Obviously, we would need another school. Now we're talking about the size of the school, east and north model. Again, we're talking maximum, you know, 30 kids per class, but 850. Right now, if you looked at the numbers that North has right now, that's a pretty good idea of the number of students that we'd probably want to put there. But it's the same model as the east and north, if we were to do that.
When you say model, meaning like floor plan?
The floor plan, yeah.
So two-story kind of a thing. All right.
And the reason we would consider that as optimal is the point is we're not adding another elementary. So if you're not going to build another elementary, a 10th elementary, you need to make that elementary have a greater capacity. If you've done that at East and you do that at a New South, you have addressed some issues. And if you look at the next bullet points, East, when it gets done, would take some of the current South boundary students. And this is where the shuffling starts to happen. The New South would take students from Iron Springs boundary. Iron Springs would take students from Three Peaks boundary. And by doing that, you have decreased the enrollment at the two most impacted schools, which are Iron Springs and Three Peaks. So with that increased capacity, you're able to capture enough to bring those numbers down at Iron Springs and Three Peaks, and potentially have everybody functioning optimally, at least until the population gets to a point where we have to start thinking about something else again. But that's the reason for the bigger school. Is you're either looking at one school that has more capacity, or you need to probably look at two schools with smaller capacity.
Have we experienced anything different since we built North and we have a much larger capacity there, with the community feeling, with the students? Has North experienced anything different? I mean, I'm just asking what the difference is between Iron Springs and North.
They did have increased enrollment when we did that boundary change. We did that on purpose because they had capacity.
Right.
So, but I can't say that they have experienced anything that would be considered, you know, negative or anything. It's functioning really well right now. Now, if we were to maximize it and put 30 kids in every class, you know, and they had 850 kids, I think that you would definitely see some downside to that. But
and just quickly as a reminder to the board, we're almost 4:30 and we're on item 3, and so we do have our meeting that will start. I know, and it's a big one. It's good discussion, but if there are, you know, comments and things, so we'll have time to continue these discussions because we're in a work meeting, but we do need to push along. So,
and we're almost done with these slides, and then I do think the rest of the work meeting agenda is going to move pretty quickly. So, a South conversion, we'd be looking at 2 to 2.5 million. That would be windows, cabinets, bathrooms. Things would need to be sized to fit the bigger kids and everything. We we may be able to, Todd and I were just talking, we may be able to tap into some creative solutions for like things like windows through some energy savings efforts that we could implement that could maybe save us a little bit on that cost, but it still would be somewhat of an investment, obviously, to alter that school. We do have on slide 44, in order for us to discuss that one, we would need to go into a closed session, which we would be, I think it would only take a few minutes.
Okay.
But if you wanted to do that, we could do that right now. I would ask that you allow all the district administration and these guys to stay, because it's really just basic stuff about one of the buildings that you have talked about before. We could do that really fast and then come out and then resume.
Okay, so we'll look for a motion.
I'll move that we go into closed session for a few minutes to discuss a building, potential building site, and a possible purchasing. I did not have all the words.
That's pretty close.
Is that close? Dang it.
Purchase, exchange, or lease of real property.
Sorry, I'll do it. Purchase, exchange, or lease of real property.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we go into closed session for the purpose or exchange of real property and to allow all present in the room to stay. Roll call vote.
John Taylor, aye.
Tyrell Eddy, aye.
Michelle Tullis, aye.
Ben Johnson, aye.
Stephanie Hill, aye.
Megan Ralphs, aye.
Tiffany Christiansen, aye.
And with that, we are in closed session.
Okay.